Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest in world news and health research. Hope everybody's having an absolutely fantastic day today. How are you doing today, Dan?
Austin, I'm absolutely blessed. It's a beautiful day. No chemtrails. I mean, that's one way of looking at life. We have no chemtrails, though. I am blessed when we do have chemtrails. Because there's all kinds of natural things you can do to help get that junk back out of your brain. So I'm good. I'm doing great. But I want to talk about what happened supposedly this weekend. And I'm going to read you a couple articles now, and I'll tell you my opinion on all this stuff. It says that Operation Obliteration, how U.S. gunships cornered ISIS leader. Now remember, these are U.S. gunships. They're coming in on radar. These are not radar-protected planes or trains or whatever, helicopters. U.S. gunships cornered ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi before he dragged three children with him into a dead-end tunnel and detonated a suicide belt, as Donald Trump said he watched live on TV, linked like a movie. Now, here's just some weird stuff about this. Trump announces that he died like a dog being run down a dead-end tunnel. The U.S.-led forces descended on Baghdadi's lair, Syria, overnight, where he was cornered in the tunnel. Vast documents were discovered in the lair. Of course they were, which could help provide vital intelligence on the ISIS future plans. Yeah, I'm sure they weren't shredded. Operation was named after U.S. aid worker Kyla Mueller, who was tortured, raped, and killed by Baghdadi. 5 years ago, Baghdadi launched his self-styled caliphate, which brought a new wave of terror to the globe. Say, so this sounds like a Hollywood movie to me. Now, here's what's interesting to me. He's in a tunnel, and he detonates a suicide vest. He drags wives and children with him before he does this. The U.S. troops are hot on his trail, close enough to him that they're videotaping everything. And he's in a concrete tunnel, or a tunnel built into the side of a hill. It's not saying what this is. You know, when Hitler basically, when the assassination attempt with the Operation Valkyrie took place back in 1944, and they tried to kill Hitler, they were going to put him, they wanted him in the concrete bunker where there were no windows, and when it exploded, the concussion blast alone would have killed Hitler and everybody in the bunker. And so the bomb was set off, but they moved the location to a wooden building instead, which blew the windows out, and there's a giant oak table there that Hitler was injured, but he wasn't killed. And what's interesting to me is here's a vest full of C4 or some other type of explosive that supposedly when he sees that he's being raided or the airships are coming in, which apparently they, you know, saw them on radar. We're going to get to that in just a second. He basically straps on a suicide vest. Instead of hopping in a car and leaving or getting you know, heliported away or whatever they want to do with him, he runs into a dead-end tunnel and straps on a suicide vest. And then here, this hardcore ISIS leader basically whimpers like a dog, begs for his life, kills his three wives, kills three children, and we get a treasure trove of data from his lair. Now, to me, this all sounds strange. That, you know, number one, that how were no U.S. troops killed in a tunnel from a blast from a suicide vest? Just thought I'd mention that, because no one seems to be asking that question. Let's not forget also that Obama released Baghdadi before the Trump administration basically supposedly killed him. Now, we know that Obama released this guy, and now Trump's administration supposedly killed him. How do we know that Baghdadi's not working for the Mossad or the MI6 or for the CIA? We don't know that. I mean, why was he released again after he was already in custody when he's supposed to be the most dangerous person in the world? Now, Trump, again, confirms that this all happened and basically does a, you know, big deal on TV yesterday on Fox, and said he died like a dog, whimpering and crying and screaming. Okay, so we have a hardcore, basically, terrorist, supposedly, who's already been in prison once, who gets out and leads this world's supposed terrorist group, and he dies whimpering and screaming. That doesn't make sense to me. Not when the guy's already got a suicide vest on. Why would he have a suicide vest on and die whimpering and screaming? Why would he put the suicide vest on to start with? Now, let's give a couple little things here real quick. This is from RT. And it says, Russia doubts Trump's announcement of killing ISIS chief Baghdadi and rejects the claims it assisted U.S. forces in the operation. It had nothing to do with it. It said it was not involved in it whatsoever. And it says there's no credible data to the successful American raid that took place against the Islamic State leader. This is from Russia. Earlier, Trump made a rare Sunday address in the White House informing the world that this guy was killed in Syria. Here's the problem with all of this stuff. Russia has super advanced radar systems and missile systems that are already in place in Syria since they decided to go in there and stop this mess from going on. So we've got to ask ourselves a simple question. If this actually happened, how in the world did the Russian radar systems not pick up these helicopters and gunships coming in? And that's exactly what Russia said. They picked up nothing on their radar with their 400 systems. Russian intelligence inside Syria reported that their S-400 radar systems, which cover Abdiib, saw no American aircraft over the area where the Baghdadi raid was claimed. Now, this is some pretty hardcore evidence here, guys. I mean, both back and forth here. And after what happened with Osama bin Laden and how he was tossed out of a helicopter and no DNA evidence was ever done for this guy, and everybody said he had this kidney disease and he died 14 years earlier, and all of a sudden this guy gets blown to smithereens by a suicide desk to the best, so they can't find any DNA of this guy either. The Russian Defense Ministry says it has no reliable information about the U.S. servicemen conducting the operation to yet another elimination of al-Baghdid in a Turkish-controlled part of the zone. So, the Russians are very disappointed with Trump and say their U.S. is putting Adib's hunt of al-Qaeda force under joint command with newly informed ISIS under American protection in Iraq and newly occupied areas of Syria where American forces just took over even more Syrian oil assets. So we've got a problem here. We've got S-400 systems that didn't pick up any radar traffic whatsoever. We've got the United States saying that they killed this guy. We've got Trump saying that it was like he was watching a movie. We've got Russia saying that it never happened. And so, again, where do we go from here? I mean, where do we go from here? How do we prove either side of this? And until I see more evidence on all of this stuff, Austin, yeah, I'm just going to say I don't know. I don't know what happened. All I know is this. It sure is convenient. Trump needs a big boost in the polls, and suddenly here we go again. Reminds me of the little video that we saw of Hillary Clinton sitting there as Secretary of State with Obama in that Situation Room watching this SEAL team go in and kill Osama bin Laden. So here's my only suggestion for you guys that were on the team that went in and did this. Stay off of helicopters. Because remember what happened, guys? And I called this. I said this 6 weeks before it happened. I said the guys from SEAL Team 6 who supposedly killed Osama bin Laden, their lives are in danger because they know the truth. And they're loose. This thing's not tidy. They're loose assets that are running around knowing the truth and can run their mouth and basically have all of these guys dethroned or deplatformed or killed or assassinated or impeached or whatever you want to do to them. And so all of a sudden, 6-8 weeks later, the helicopter with these guys that are in suddenly blows up and SEAL Team 6 is killed after they've already gone to the White House and already received their accommodations. So guys, it's so important that you all question what happened. So are you saying that Ted says that this didn't happen? Ted says he has no idea. I have no idea what happened over there. All I know is Russia said it didn't happen. The United States said it did happen. And quite frankly, the United States government has lied to us so much. Remember, these are the same guys spraying you with chemtrails, saying they're not doing it. These are the same guys that are manipulating the war through geoengineering and telling you they're not doing it. These are the same guys that are controlled through the Exchange Stability Fund, through the Federal Reserve, to the New York Fed, controlling our money supply and shorting silver and gold every single day, but telling you they're not doing it. These are the same, these are the same guys pushing the GMOs, pushing the vaccinations, pushing everything else. These are always, it's always the same guys. So who do we believe, Russia or the United States? Austin, what do you think?
Well, you got to look back. This whole thing with ISIS, as most people probably know by now, we've talked about it repeatedly, was built and funded by essentially the intelligence community of the world via the CIA, the MI6, the Mossad and so forth. We know, and there's evidence that we even brought up repeatedly, that MI6 had cooperated with the CIA and armed transfers from the Libyan stockpiles to the Syrian rebels, i.e. ISIS, in 2012 after the fall of the Gaddafi regime. That was one of the huge aspects that was going on in Benghazi, was all those surfaced air missiles, all the heavy weaponry that was in Libya was being transferred out. Where was it going? Oh, it happened to go and accidentally in the hands of ISIS because they were arming the alleged Syrian rebels to fight Assad. And the ironic part about it, when Obama came out with this, oh, we lost another shipment. We don't know what happened, you know, to the 20,000 machine guns and surfaced air missiles and hand grenades and everything else we have. We just lost one of those shipments, and apparently ISIS got a hold of it. I mean, that was, you had to be living under a rock, you thinking, you know, just to actually believe the lies that they were continually telling us. And then if you guys remember that also, John Kerry went on record admitting that the Syrian strategy was actually to arm ISIS and Islamic groups against Assad. This discussion and the whole thing that happened in 2013 and 2014, finalizing the aspect of what was going on over there. And then when Trump got into office, a lot of that stopped. And it did stop, allegedly. From what I'd heard and what I've been told, a lot of that stopped over there. It's funny how, in order to keep something going, they kept funding it, and then all of a sudden, when the narrative was to change and ISIS wasn't supposed to be the big bad boy on the block anymore, and they weren't supposed to have all these heavy weapons, we stopped giving them weapons. So it's very strange to see this is what happened here, and then, excuse me. And then to see what happened over the weekend, again, I don't know what happened with it. I did read the reports from what came out from the Russian intelligence. And, you know, if you have numerous AC-130 gunships, which is more than likely what they probably had, they also had probably Blackhawks and so forth, they had this many operators coming in. They had a sizable force coming in. There's no way you're not going to pick that up with some type of radar, and you're going to see these guys coming in. Now, I mean, could it have been a really, 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 really small recon ground mission? Possibly, but I highly would have doubt they would have sent that few men in for this level of allegedly what was involving. So I don't know. I don't know as far as the whole aspect, whether it was totally real, whether it was staged, whether we're getting bits and pieces of it. Once you start realizing that ISIS only came about because we were arming ISIS and we were funding ISIS and they were getting money and food and transport and vehicles. Remember the photos that emerged when ISIS allegedly popped out of the sand out of nowhere? And they're running around in a convoy with like 150 brand new Toyota pickup trucks, all matching, and they're all running around with belt-fed automatic weapons, and they're talking about they have the unlimited supply of ammunition. Where'd they get all this ammunition? Where'd they get all this weaponry? Where'd they get all these vehicles from? That stuff in the Middle East doesn't just pop up. Most of the arms supplies, especially the ammunition, ammo dumps, are destroyed when military leave operating bases. They'll put in a giant hole and they'll blow it all up. They don't just leave all the weaponry there anymore. They used to do that some, but they don't do that anymore, especially not to the extent that these guys were getting a hold of. So you got to look at what's really going on and understand what's really happening and just kind of try to understand the best you can that a lot of this stuff is used on a regular basis to obfuscate what's really going on behind the scenes. Also, too, in other news, this is interesting. I saw this on Zero Hedge this morning now. According to Bloomberg, the subprime auto loans are starting to sour sooner at an accelerating rate. They said loans made as recently as last year going bad at the fastest rate possible since they've ever seen since 2008, with more consumers than usual defaulting within the first few months of borrowing on an auto loan. They said many of these loans have been packaged into bonds after being consummated. Santander is one of the largest subprime auto lenders in the market, and the quick failure of its loans could be an indicator that some of its borrowers are getting loans based on fraudulent application information, a problem that the company has grappled with in the past and that we saw extremely systemic back in 2006 and 2007. They said during the housing crisis last decade, one of the indicators of the application frauds when mortgages started to fall behind within months of being made. Now, so this is something that we're starting to see here, and you notice a lot of times, if you've seen this now, a lot of these new vehicles They're extending the rate of loan out further and further. You know, usually the longest most people did was like 48 to 60 months. That was about as far as most people ever wanted to finance a vehicle. Then they stretched out to the 72 months. Then they stretched it out to the 84 months. And I've seen some of them even tried to stretch it out slightly past that. And so the thing that you have to understand when you start looking at these loans, and these are talking a more, you know, defaulting in an early phase, but when you start taking a vehicle that, you know, is probably going to depreciate pretty rapidly, and you're going to finance the thing out for 7 years, 7 years, and you figure at that point in time, on average, you're going to have probably 80 to 100,000 miles on the vehicle by the time it's actually paid off. So there's going to be no warranty. The value of it's going to be next to nothing, and you're going to pay on those vehicles longer and longer. It makes it pretty difficult for a lot of people. And then you start factoring in the student loans that have become unbelievably problematic in this country, along with the rising as far as cost of housing and expenses. And we see what's going on with the vehicle expense, the vehicle loans now. So just something to understand that these are all signs we keep bringing up. The same thing we saw in 2007, essentially, where we were right on the cusp of it, when all these little things started to occur and most people just wanted to ignore them and pretend it wasn't happening and continue to use their house as an ATM machine as their house value continued to almost grow in value exponentially, which was completely unrealistic. And we're starting to see that more and more now with a lot of these houses. The value of them has gone up so much when it's not even anywhere near realistic level. The same thing with these vehicles now. So something to be aware of, Dad. I just want to bring that up this morning as well.
The problem is the utility value of houses. Once you start getting past $1,000 a month in mortgage or in, you know, in rent or whatever, the units are basically hard to rent and they're hard to sell. And they don't cash flow. And what people are doing is something they did back in the, you know, 10, 15 years ago. They're using their homes as ATMs, and they're getting second and third mortgages on them, and they're assuming they're going to go up in value enough to sell them, flip out of the loans, and get a bigger house and do it over again. This is the house flipping that happened 10, 12, 15 years ago that caused a big implosion in the housing market with 17 million unsold units in the United States, with millions and millions of people filing bankruptcy because of the housing loans. Because sooner or later, you're playing musical chairs, somebody runs out of seats. And this is what happened back in 2007. We ran into a giant liquidity problem, and people started defaulting on their loans. The same thing's happening again. You know, a house that you could have built for $140,000 10 years ago now when the market collapsed, now it's back up to $300,000. And you got to look at what's happening, because at that point in time, if you're borrowing the money and your loan is $1,500, $1,600, $1,700 a month, you can't really cash flow that house as a rental unit. And so it becomes very difficult. Same thing happened with Obama, with the cash for clunkers cars. You know, there were a whole bunch. There were millions of really good cars on the road that were old. They were old, but they were good. I mean, you could buy them for $500, $600, less than $1,000, and kids needed them to pay for part-time jobs. Parents need to be able to help their children buy them. The insurance was basically next to nothing on them as far as they weren't worth anything. And so they were great units. But Obama came in, did a cash for clunkers program, and they came in and basically poured concrete down inside of the intakes, and that was the end of the vehicle because of the end of the engines. And they did this with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of vehicles. We never got an actual number on all of that we know that's accurate. We know some speculation on them. And so what we ended up with is a really big shortage in cheap used cars. Well, suddenly used cars went from $500 or $600 for a good used car, maybe $1,000, to $1,500, to $2,000, to $2,500, to $5,000. Now it's hard to get a decent used car for less than $5,000. Now, that pretty much prevents all young children from buying a car. 16, 17-year-olds can't go out and get a part-time job making $8 or $9 an hour and make the payments and make the insurance payments on a $5,000 car, because they'd have to have really high insurance to make sure they cover the cost. All of this was done by Obama, supposedly under the guise of getting these polluting vehicles off the road. But in fact, what it did do is it took all the vehicles off that were not being tracked by OnStar or satellite systems or GPS. That's what it did do. They had to find a way to continually, you know, monitor all of us to make sure they knew where we were. I mean, with right now, last year, I talked to a friend of mine at the car dealership, and they had a guy brought them a clear title on a Denali, or it was an Escalade, and he had basically bought this car, paid cash for it, and then got a clear title, and then basically that whole deal didn't go through, so he owed the money, but he had the clear title. But he didn't own the car because basically the check bounced for the title. Well, he came down here and traded it in on a new Corvette. and took off with the Corvette. So now he cleared out. He basically had the car he didn't pay for, traded in on a car, got it paid for free and clear, and took off with it. And like 2-3 weeks later, all the paperwork came through, and nothing was, there was a lien on the Denali or the Escalade or whatever it was. And so they contacted him via OnStar and told him, they said, here's what we're going to do. OnStar is fixing to turn your car off at the interstate. Wherever you are, they're turning it off. We know where you are. You're traveling interstate such and such and such and such city, such and such, wherever you are right now. So we're monitoring you. So we're going to shut your car off, turn the power off to the ignition, and you're going to stop in the middle of the highway. Or you're going to take this vehicle back to the Chevy dealership, and we're going to basically repo it. And that's exactly what they did. That's what he did. Now think about that for a second. They couldn't do that with a cash or clunker car. They could do it with those, with the new cars. And in addition to that, you've got to understand that a lot of vehicles, and it's always been this way, depending upon the name, the make, et cetera, once you drive them off the lot, you lose 30%. So if you're driving a, let's just even worse, sometimes you drive an Escalade. Let's say you buy a $100,000 Escalade, which those cars are really horrible, horrible vehicles to purchase new, and you basically have it for 1 year. You take it back to the dealership, they're going to offer you $55,000 to $60,000 for it. So you almost lost 50%. Well, if you got that thing on an 8-year payment program and you didn't put any money down, you got 4 more years to drive that thing before you get to where it's worth right now. By the time you get to it in 4 years, it's worth $20,000. So there's no way out of it. You're stuck in it unless you turn right back around and refinance the balance due, the deficiency of it, and a new vehicle, and start all over again with the same scenario, and it gets worse and worse and worse. I was at another car dealership the other day, and I was sitting there talking to the general manager about a deal I was trying to work out on a pickup truck, and some guy comes, one of the sales guys walks up and says, we're trying to get this deal done with this lady, and she's $15,000 apart, and, you know, she, the cars that we're trading in is worth $15,000 less than, you know, than she owes on it. And the general manager says, look, it's not our responsibility that she basically traded into a vehicle that she can't get out of, so we can't do the deal. And this is what's happening throughout the entire car industry right now in the United States. If you're going to buy a car, and I'm not promoting any – actually, I am. I'm going to promote some brands here. If you're going to buy a car, if you're going to buy a Chevrolet, get a truck. Get a diesel truck. And it will really hold its value well. If you get a four-wheel drive diesel truck, you can really trade out of those pretty well every few years and not be in a ditch. That's one of the best vehicles you can do with as far as American made. Corvette, not the 19 models, but the 2020 models, should have a really good resale value if you want to get a sports car. You've never had one, but just be aware there's a, you're not going to tow a boat with it, and you're not going to take a family in it. Just thought I'd mention that. But the new Corvettes are absolutely stunningly beautiful. I saw one first the other day for the first time. Austin and I saw one in a dealership over in Plant City, Stingray Chevrolet in Plant City. They had one, and they had literally hundreds of people standing in line to see it, and they'll sit in it and look at the engine, et cetera. It's a first mid-engine Corvette. Just not promoting Corvette, but I love Corvettes. And then you've got Toyotas and Nissans and Hondas. I avoid Nissans because they don't have as good a resale value. I do just avoid them. But the Toyotas and the Hondas are good. The Honda Accords are great cars. You can buy a nice base Honda Accord for around $20,000, $21,000 as base model. And you can keep it for 2 or 3 or 4 years. It's still going to be worth around $16,000 or $17,000. You can trade it back in and get out of it pretty easily. Those are the ones you need to do. But remember, don't buy the decked out Honda Accords that cost $40,000. The higher you go in a vehicle when you buy it, the more it drops off. Don't do that. I've learned when I buy pickup trucks, I buy a truck. Like if you buy a Ford, I buy like a Lariat. That's it. I don't go to the top level. Just buy a Lariat. That's just basically the Ford with the basic options with the leather, et cetera, et cetera. Nice trucks. The Lariat package actually has a resale value on it. Same thing with Chevrolet. You can get an LTZ. That holds real well. The High Country holds real well, too. So there's all kinds of things that you could do, but don't add a bunch of extra stuff. Don't add a bunch of frills and whistles to it. It doesn't make any difference unless you need those particular options because you're running a business with it. But think through what you're doing with the car, and don't buy payments. Buy the amount you owe. So many people do this. They don't care how much money is owed on the car. They want to know what their payment is every month. So if the payment doesn't change, if they're paying $300 a month for this car payment, that's basically almost paid for, and they buy another car that's $300 a month, they don't realize they may have financed another $15,000 or $20,000 in debt and have a negative equity in this vehicle. They don't understand. You've got to find out what the actual dollar amount is that you're trading for, not the payment. You say, well, I don't care about the dollar amount. I just make payments on the cars. Okay, you got to get past that in your mind. you probably need to keep a car long enough to get it paid for. And then that way you know exactly what you're paying differently for. But if you're going to do that, you better stay with Honda and you better stay with Toyota if you're going to keep one that long. Because, guys, the Chevrolets and the Fords, they will hold up. You know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the road, you're putting transmissions in these vehicles, which could be $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. And you need to avoid that if you possibly can. But the Hondas and the Toyotas have the best longevity for what I've seen. And, again, be very, very careful. Oh, by the way, a drug cartel just defeated the Mexican military in battle. Thought I'd mention that. Mexico's basically in a state of collapse, and the Americans need to realize that the crisis underway south of the border, the Rio Grande, isn't stopping here, which is causing what we may call this flood of immigrants coming in from Mexico. This is an excellent article by John Daniel Davidson, and I have posted it on our website. It says, last Thursday in the city of Culiacan, the capital of the Sinaloa state, a battle erupted between the government forces and a drug cartel gunman after the military captured two sons of jailed drug kingpin El Chapo. The elder son, Ivan, was quickly freed by his men who overpowered the government forces. Are you listening to me? The drug cartels overpowered the military and secured the release. Ivan then launched an all-out siege on the entire city in an effort to free his younger brother. I mean, we've got full-blown military warfare happening with the drug cartels and the Mexican military. And, you know, and it's something that we need to realize, guys. This is what happens when you have a communist state. This is what happens when you have a group of people who basically are living in a socialist, so-called utopia. This is not okay. And this is the problem that we have in the socialist communist countries of Central and South America. They can't even feed themselves. Here's another article. And this one, by the way, is a lot of disinformation, so I'm calling it out as BS. I'm sorry, as bunk before we start on this. This is an article that says Americans' love of drugs may soon bring Mexico's collapse. Okay. What they're doing here, they're saying basically, is because of the Americans wanting the drugs to come into the United States, all of the other stuff, including avocados down in Mexico, simply aren't in as big a demand because they can make more money on drugs. Here's the newsflash for everybody listening to this. The drug cartels bring a lot of drugs into the United States. There's no doubt about that, from Mexico. But our CIA brings in over $1 trillion of heroin in illegal narcotics into the United States and throughout the world every single year through Afghanistan, making it the third largest commodity in the world behind oil and natural gas. But they always do this. He quotes a recent RAND Corporation, which is neck deep into deep state, by the way, reports that the Americans spend just shy of $150 billion on illegal narcotics in 2016. It's much higher than that, by the way. This bulk of money goes to Mexico. It does not. And all of this stuff, they may spend $150 billion in the money coming out of Mexico. That may be an accurate statement. But it's much, much higher than that with the money coming out of Afghanistan. And again, we are the only people to talk about this. And quite frankly, I don't like talking about this because it's one of those things I really don't really want to get into very often. But this is what's happening. We have a corrupt government along with the CIA that is doing all of this stuff. And now they're saying it's Mexico that's causing our problems with the drugs. Hogwash. Austin, what do you think?
Well, I remember an old guy I talked to years ago, retired military, Marine Corps, and he told me, he said, the aspect of when you get in a heavy gunfight is whoever can produce the heaviest amount of firepower within the first 30 seconds of the gunfight usually has a significantly higher percentage of winning. I don't remember. He told me the exact percentage, but I don't remember. You've seen enough of them. And what that means is, if you get in a gunfight, especially if, say, you have a five-man team against a five-man team, whoever has the heaviest weapons with the most amount of ammo, with the strongest ability to basically push forward and engage aggressively as possible for the first 30 seconds of the fight is probably going to win the gunfight through statistical odds. When we allowed the ATF, through Eric Holder, to run thousands of high-powered weapons, including belt-fed machine guns and 50-caliber rifles, to the Mexican drug cartel, and nobody was held accountable, we blatantly encourage this type of behavior down there. The only reason the drug cartel has the ability to do this is because of the weaponry that they have. If they were down there back in the day like it was in the 70s when, you know, they were still trying to figure out how to get their product into the United States and they had little 9mm Uzis and stuff like that, this wouldn't be possible. But when you start having the military come out with 308 belt feds and 50 calibers, and then all of a sudden the drug cartel shows up with more belt fed M250 calibers and more 308 belt fed machine guns and more grenades and more rocket launchers, all of a sudden it becomes very difficult to overpower them. That's what they're seeing down there. Now, it's ironic to me is that in that article, nobody discusses the fact of Eric Holder's Justice Department and all multiple top officials who sent thousands of these weapons to the drug cartels via the U.S. taxpayers' expense, I might add, and then went on basically to have, call it a botched investigation, which was a blatant gun-running scheme, but they got caught, so they call it a botched investigation, which the media parroted, and we found out later on it was completely and totally covered up, multiple lies under oath by top officials, which resulted in Holder being held in criminal contempt of Congress, if you remember, but all that dissipated. Multiple federal lawsuits by U.S. lawmakers against the DOJ. And again, it just phased out, just fiddled out, just slowly phased away. Nobody wants to bring up that ugly skeleton in the closet anymore about the Department of Justice and the ATF's involvement in arming the Mexican drug cartel. And so when I see stuff like this happen, you have to understand why it happened, why it's continuing to happen. And here's the thing you got to understand. If this happened one time and they lied about it and covered it up, what possibly makes you think they have not done it a dozen times before and a dozen times after? When you know you have an ultimately corrupt system and you have an alphabet agency that literally lives above the law, and I'm referring to the ATF, as we have seen in almost every single incident and scandal they're involved in, nobody gets indicted, nobody goes to jail, most people don't even get reprimanded. It's absolutely insane how these guys operate. And so we know they're involved in it before. We've known they've been operating in it multiple times again. And so this is why you see these groups, just like I mentioned earlier with ISIS, when they're so well-funded, so heavily armed, and people go, well, we don't know, they just happen to make guns in the backyard, you know, they got all these weapons out of nowhere. Come on, guys. This is what they're doing down there, and they're continuing to destabilize this. This is what the globalist agenda is. This is why, when we saw what I think it was Brian Terry, the individual who ended up dying, who's the Border Patrol agent that ended up getting killed by one of the automatic AK-47s by an illegal alien at the border that was tied directly into one of these weapons that was transferred over. So understand what's really happening over there and understand who's actually behind it and read through all the propaganda and rhetoric that they always want you to believe. Also, too, in other news, a lot of individuals are really trying to get ready again in California as they're allegedly about to experience the biggest blackout ever as violent windstorms are forcing PG&E, Edison, and Sempra to shut down powers to millions of residents over the fears of broken transmission lines. They said now PG&E came out nationally on Friday, and the CEO, Bill Johnson, appeared before the California Public Utilities Commission and told regulators the state will likely see severe rolling blackouts for another 10 years until they can figure out how to fix the problem. Remember a couple weeks ago I said that PG&E released and they said that this is something that people need to get prepared for currently and this is probably going to happen regularly? Now they're coming out now and saying this is going to happen over the next 10 years due to wildfires and winds. Are we living in the 1920s now? Have we not figured out how to get electricity to houses without having winds blow them off power lines? I mean, is this really what they're expecting us to believe? This is getting the American population. Remember, the whole idea with Agenda 21 and the UN 2030 agenda is to put the American population into small apartment buildings in giant mega cities, and the rest of the country is basically kept in basically it's preserved. It's kept in unity. Us pesky humans don't get involved in it. That's what Agenda 2030 blatantly lines this out, if you guys have ever read it. I've read a lot of the literature they have on it. So what they're slowly starting to do is making it so unbearable, so horrific, so untenable to a lot of these families that are living in some of these rural areas of California that they're going to be forced to move out. This is what a lot of the wildfires, and I believe were also started with some of the space-based weapon platforms last year, when we saw concrete houses, block houses, burn to ash in a pile when grass and trees and wooden fences were not even scorched. And every single house in the neighborhood was laying in an ash heap. Every concrete house was laying in an ash heap, literally burned down to ash. And all the grass, all the trees, all the fences were not even charred. I don't know how fires have ever done that in recent history. I've never seen that occur in my life. But that is what we've seen now. We've seen it happen, and now we're seeing this happen over there. So now PG&E is saying this is going to become regular occurrence over the next 10 years, which is pretty much unfunctional. I mean, you can't expect to function healthily in a society and have a business and have schools and everything else and not know when your next rolling blackout's going to be. I mean, that's third world country status. And so that's what I truly believe is happening right now, is they're slowly beta testing to seeing how the population in California is going to accept this, how they're going to more than likely move out of these areas, and then slowly the globalists can come in and cordon off large portions of the countryside that they can make essentially preservation areas and push all the individuals into these big mega cities via Agenda 2030. At least that's what they said they want to do in this protocol, and it appears that's what they're trying to do. Dad.
Well, the crazy part about all this is that, you know, you've got a lot of people who have children, infants, and everything else that are basically nursing mothers and people who have refrigeration needs with insulin, et cetera, and we don't think about all that. I mean, the one thing that has been going through the roof is Generac sales, and their stock's gone through the roof. And the Generac generators are great generators. I've got four of them, I think. But what's interesting about a Generac generator is they're not what you think they are. You know, they're propane, diesel, gasoline, whatever you get, hogs. They use a lot of fuel, especially the bigger ones. Years ago, I had one here on the front of the house, and it would turn on when we had thunderstorms. We'd have the power off for a couple of hours, and that was fine. But it turned on in 2004 when our final hurricane came, and it went through 250 gallons of propane in 3 days at $4 a gallon. Now think about that. Okay, that's 250,000. That's almost $300 a day for propane. And you think, well, that's insane. That's right. Now they're not made to run so you have all your lights on all the time. What they're made to do, if you ever get one of these things, and you've got to think through it if you get one, is they're made to run the basics for short periods of time throughout the day. They're made to keep the freezer cold, the refrigerator cold, and you run it for like 2 or 3 hours a day, and that's the end of it. If you don't run them constantly, you're not going to live in luxury and watch TV every night with your Generac generator going, unless you want to spend $600 or $700 a day in fuel. It's just, that's what happens. And so this big one that I had here at the front of the house, it basically went out on me, and I didn't bother to replace it. Now I have it set up so that if power goes out, we just run on a small generator and run the refrigerators and make sure we have enough water stored up. It's just not worth it. Now, I do have a solar panel system also, but it's set up so it works off-grid. Now, you staying with me, folks? Most solar panels don't work off-grid. In other words, if the power goes off, they turn off. And so that keeps the battery units charged, which keeps the well charged on the property, which keeps water going into the house 24/7 because it's running on solars and batteries, but not a running generator. Running generators are extremely inefficient. The reason they're inefficient, they may be running, let's say they're running 100 kilowatts, which mine's nowhere near that big, but let's say they're running 100 kilowatts, but you only need 7 kilowatts. It still burns about the same amount of fuel as 7 kilowatts versus 100 kilowatts. You have what's called spinning reserve. The utility companies can get away with this extra capacity, which is also called spinning reserve, by the way, because they have all these different homes pulling off of it at all times, and they can monitor it and shift power from one line to another line to reduce the amount of waste they have as far as utilities. This is what Austin just mentioned. I don't understand what's going on with PG&E. If they're having a problem with wildfires that are basically, you know, arcing these power lines and causing these forests to go on fire, it's funny how they knew about it 2 weeks in advance this time, which I think is very odd. Why don't they just bury the power lines,
Yeah, how about
there
that?
You go.
How about they just bury him 6 feet under the ground and be done with this crap? I mean, this is so stupid. So, again, it goes back to Agenda 2030, which is what Austin said so clearly. They don't want us living in nature. They want us being able to be controlled in a small group of 200 square feet in an apartment. This is the way they control us, and this is what they've already done in China. This is the model they've used over there. If you've been to China, they have little tiny apartments and they have a whole family living in them. They're like 200 square feet. And it's ridiculous, but this is what they do in China. This is what they want here. This is the model they want. But remember, these are the same guys telling us they want to keep the Earth as a giant preserve. No, they don't. They're literally extinguishing 100 species a day through extinction that are never coming back because of their chemtrails, their Morgellons, all the aluminum, the barium they're pumping into the environment, all the other toxins they put into the groundwater. They don't care about human beings and people. They just want to cull the population of the planet. Now, one more thing that Austin mentioned, let's go back to ATF and the FBI and why very rarely do any of these guys ever go to jail. You've got to use perfect example, Waco and Ruby Ridge and what happened under two different administrations with that. The reason they don't go to jail is they don't want these guys testifying. They don't want the ATF agent saying, well, so-and-so told me to do this, and so-and-so says, well, so-and-so told me to do it, and they go to the top people. So they just don't prosecute these guys. It happens all the time. You know, last week we did a report that this Hillary email thing, now dozens of people have been basically, you know, blamed for what happened with all the loss of all the emails, et cetera, but none of them are being charged. Now it's being written up in their employment files, okay, which is whatever, but they're not being charged with any kind of criminal offense. Why? Because they don't want it rolling uphill. They don't want the collateral damage of the blowback going to the people who put the orders in, and they don't want it going back to the deep state, which would be the Rothschild banking cartel. They don't want this. They're trying to avoid having all of that stuff illuminated. So that's why no one's ever prosecuted. Remember, now Donald Trump goes to the World Series game this weekend. What happens to him? He gets out there, and they start screaming, lock him up, lock him up. I mean, what is he thinking? He's going to one of his rallies with a bunch of Trumpers? Is that where he think he is? You got a bunch of Democrats in a lot of these states. They don't like the guy. They hate him, and they believe all this stuff about Russian collusion, and they really dislike Donald Trump. And then we have to understand something, guys. Trump is an actor. He had his apprentice for many, many years on the TV. He basically followed a script. He knew exactly what to say and what to do, and he continues to follow a script today. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to go on record and say this. As long as he stays on script, there's no way he will not be reelected. If he comes off of script and he starts doing whatever he wants to do, they'll put somebody else in his place because he's no longer a tenable asset. And so we have to be very, very careful, you know, in support of Trump from a carte blanche standpoint. I mean, I like some of the things he's done. You know, he's got, you know, 60 miles of fence rebuilt, that kind of stuff. He's working on another 150 miles of fence. You know, it's not going to be the thousands of miles he promised us when he went into office. But, of course, the Supreme Court had to deal with all that. But the reality is this. You know, I've got to say he's done some things that are good. Now, whether he went off script to do those things or not, I don't know. But I'll always remember what Bill Clinton said, Austin. He said he learned quickly when he was president that he doesn't make the decisions that somebody else does. And see, this is the deep state that Woodrow Wilson put into place. In fact, he said on his deathbed he destroyed his country. You know, that low life finally figured it out before he checked out. And I can't stand the guy. I mean, I know I've been to Geneva, Switzerland several times, and there's the Woodrow Wilson Hotel there. And I'm like, whatever, man. Why did they name a hotel after this guy? Well, it was because of World War I and the League of Nations and the Versailles Treaty and all the rest of this stuff. And see, this is what we need to understand. It's the same group that has done this and has done this for thousands of years. This world is controlled. And I'm going to say it again. Through an ancient Canaanite religious sect of Baal, Moloch, Asherah and Lucifer, fallen angel worshipers, period. They consider themselves to be the Ma'adi Nephilim, the sons of the fallen, the progeny, the very blood relatives of Lucifer himself. That's who these guys think they are. And, you know, you think, well, that sounds crazy. I didn't say, I'm just join the club. I think it sounds crazy too. But that's what these guys believe, and they're willing to die for it. And so we have to understand who's running the planet, and they don't care, Austin, about how many insects they kill or how many frogs they kill or how many children they mutilate with transgenderism. They don't care. I mean, think about it for a second. I'm gonna fuss one for a second about these doggone doctors. You get a doctor who decides he's going to go ahead and mutilate somebody, okay, by taking off their appendages and trying to give them part of their intestinal tract and form a gaping hole in their body to create a vagina, because he can do that. He's been trained as a surgeon to do that. You know, there's a doctor over in Tampa And I've got a friend of mine who's got an who has a place at the airport, and this guy had a jet, a Russian trainer jet. This doctor did that. He made so much money from his mutilation of transgender surgeries that he has his own private fighter jet. Guys, I don't make it up. All right, so you got to ask yourself a question: are these the same doctors who do full-term abortions and don't even think twice about it? These masquerader of medicine, these butchers, these people that will take a living child and suck its brains out in a full and a partial birth abortion. These guys, this is the problem the medical people have nowadays, is that people finally begin to realize that a lot of these guys, they're so mercenary, they'll do anything for money, including butchering children and prescribing hormones for seven-year-old little boys, which we saw that case in Texas last week. Luckily, the judges intervened with that, you know, to basically have this lesbian weirdo mother who wants to turn that little boy into a little girl. And I'm going to say something real quick, and I'm going to tick some of you off on this one, all right? But I'm going to say it anyhow. Okay, there's a Jezebel spirit that's alive and well on this planet, and this is a full-blown biatch. All right, now I'm going to be very careful with what I say this morning, because this is hard to say this without saying something bad. And these women, who are basically man haters, who were raised by man haters, who are unstable emotionally, many of them are witches, many of them are Satanists, many of them are lesbians. They get this Jezebel spirit on them, and they just go berserk. They go absolutely berserk. And to punish her husband, or to whatever reason this woman wanted to do, to basically have this seven-year-old boy chemically castrated, is beyond... I can't even think like that. What would make her to do that, except for she has a Jezebel spirit. She's demon-possessed. You think, well, that sounds weird, Ted. I'm just being straight with you guys. Look at the Jezebel in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in Ahab, in the prophet Elijah, who fled from her because he didn't want to be around her. When they get like this, they go berserk. Nothing, they will do anything to attack you. They will do anything to destroy you. And they don't stop. I've got a friend of mine who's an attorney. He was a college roommate. And he told me that when he gets one of these women as a defense attorney or the other attorney, that they don't care. They'll spend 20 hours a day doing research, anything they have to in order to win the case. And he said they'll do anything legally or illegally or to the limits of the law in order to win. He says they're horrible. He says you can't reconcile with them. You can't negotiate with them. And for a woman to have some children with a guy and decide to chemically castrate one of the sons of that man, and force the man. I'm not saying, I don't know anything about this guy. He may have been a good dad. He may have been a bad dad. All I know, this ain't a good mom. You know, if that mom wants that boy to be a little girl, it's just as sick as that sounds. Why don't you wait until that little boy's 18 years old or 21 years old and say, I tell you what, bud, you're still in the theta brainwave state. And if you want to do this, I don't know what to say because I don't agree with it. But this is something you're going to have to decide at when you're 18, 21 years old. I'm not getting involved in this. This isn't going to come back on me. But remember this, there are people out there that are good parents, and there are people out there that absolutely suck at being parents. And these are the same people that would just soon abort that baby at 9 months as they would have that child. And they don't care what happens to the child. It's almost like a joke to them what they do to the children. And these people nauseate me. And I'm talking about guys and girls, people who have recreational abortions. You think, what is that? We talked about it a few weeks ago. They intentionally get pregnant to have an abortion just to basically serve Lucifer. This is that spirit, that Jezebel spirit, that controlling spirit that women get. And I'm not saying that men can't get it either, because men can be pretty messed up in the head too. But why in the world would a woman want to have a small child turn into a little girl? It's crazy to me, Austin, this kind of stuff happens. But we need to understand this is the political correct society that we live in, because what happens is this. They can't prove that there's not a difference between a man and a woman. They can't prove that. They know it's impossible to prove that. They're saying that there's no difference between men and women. What's that Jezebel spirit? There's no difference between a man and a woman. Okay. Yes, there is. You can prove that. So what they do, they can't win the arguments. What they do, they silence the opposition. They silence the opposition through political correctness. They silence the opposition through the Anti-Defamation League. They silence the opposition through attorneys and legal means and basically restraining orders and gag orders. They silence the opposition. That's right, because they're taking away our First Amendment's right. That way they can do whatever they want to do and nobody can oppose them because they can't win the argument. Perfect example, confessions of a college professor. Rants and raves about the mess of higher education in the United States. This professor says now that grading and grammar are racist. This is unbelievable. Our institutions of higher learning are massively oversized. And it goes on to say that it is racist to consider grammar and grading in a classroom. It says it's an example of white supremacy. Now, this is the Frankfurt School, brought to you by the same people who basically have done it all, okay? And this is where they pushed us to push us to destroy nationalism, to destroy the very fabric of our society and what we did in the United States to become Americans. Unbelievable. Austin, what do you think about all this stuff, and what do you think?
Well, that's well said, and this is why. And see, in my kind of take on it from what we're starting to see, and this is just my perspective, is that's why, as you said so clearly, they can't win the argument, so they just have to silence the opposition. This is what they're trying to do with the construct of hate speech. They're trying to make anything that you say that they don't agree with hate speech. That way they can then turn and muzzle you for saying anything that opposes them. Once they can push this agenda further and further and further, and I think this is, and this may be a little far right field, but I think this is where they're pushing it. They understand that they want to start the whole bio aspect of breeding people and mending them with machines and all this weird stuff that they're starting to do now, they're wanting to do, and they're already talking about, you know, with the Neuralink system that Elon Musk is wanting to implant into people's brains starting next year to interface your phone and your system. This stuff's very real, and the next step they're going to start doing is cloning humans and having mix of these, you know, human machine hybrids that are going to come together. And so at that point in time, yes, if you breed a human and a machine, however you do that, whatever twisted science you're producing to build this, you know, hybrid, it's probably going to be neither male nor female. It's going to be basically blank. And so that's what I think they're trying to get the aspect of down to, where people no longer see this anymore, because there's no understanding, there's no legitimate reasoning behind this concept that they're putting out there. This whole, well, boy can be a girl and a girl can be a boy and switch, they have no basis. There's no scientific basis. There's nothing that they can stand on whatsoever except basically their feelings and their emotions. That's it. There's nothing else they can stand on. Because, I mean, even when they start that, if somebody starts that crap with you, well, I don't identify as that, then you can, and everybody's probably heard this before, you go, okay, if you die in a car wreck tomorrow and your body's charred to ash, they do a DNA test on you, what are you, what is your DNA? Are you a male or a female? There's only one of two options here. That's it. Doesn't matter what dress you are wearing. Doesn't matter how you got all these things cut off your body. So this is what people have to start doing, is being vocal about the truth. And I know I've said this, and a lot of people are like, oh, Austin, well, don't be hateful and this and that. I'm not hateful. I'm honest. Being honest, there's nothing wrong with being honest. There's nothing being wrong with going out and speaking the truth. Because if we don't start doing that, we are going to lose this society. And I've said that so many times, but it's time now that we stop capitulating to political correctness, especially the political correctness that is absolutely detrimental to our younger children. There's certain things, whatever. If you don't want to go down that rabbit hole with somebody, don't go there. But if they start this whole nonsense with this transgender cross-dressing tranny aspect, that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be vocal about it. Also, too, in other news, I want to get one more health topic in here. An article, research study, excuse me, that came out from Trinity College in Dublin now shows directly that vitamin D deficiency is an important determinant of poor skeletal muscle function in adults 60 years and over. While resistant exercise is known to preserve muscle function, there's growing evidence that adequate vitamin D also is protective. The paper was recently published in the International Journal of Clinical Interventions in Aging. It says the prevalence of muscle weakness was twice as high among older adults with vitamin D deficiency, 40.5%, compared to vitamin D adequacy, which was 20%. Similarly, impaired muscle performance was 3 times higher in older adults with vitamin D deficiency. Findings were based on an analysis of data from 4,157 community-dwelling adults aged 60 years and older. The author of the study even said, overall, our findings add weight to the evidence in favor of public health strategies to eliminate vitamin D deficiency in older population. And that's why we carry the vitamin D 10,000 with K2, because vitamin D deficiency is a serious problem, not just in the United States. It's horrible in the United States, but globally. And supplementing with vitamin D can help out with so many different issues. And so many people are deficient. And like I said before, it's always, always ironic to me that doctors will rarely ever check for your vitamin D levels, even when women are pregnant. I've talked to numerous pregnant women. When they go see their doctor, the doctor, when they gets blood drawn, still does not even check vitamin D when the woman's pregnant, and it is crucial to keep vitamin D levels as elevated as healthily possible while pregnant, and that's why we carry the vitamin D 10,000 K2, Dan.
Awesome. That's exactly right. In fact, I have my D levels tested every year. And I try to keep them between 60 and 70. Because what I've learned is this. If you don't have a high enough vitamin D level, you really, really have a problem as far as overall health and immune system functioning. Now, another article has come out that says that more children should be getting bariatric surgery. Now, what does that mean? This is weight loss surgery. And we're talking about young children. This is more kids should get weight loss surgery, even some preteens, pediatricians are saying. We're talking about 7, 8, 9-year-old children. Now, why is this happening? Why are so many kids now so unbelievably severely obese when they're 5 and 6 and 7 years old? Okay, this is so politically correct, and I've already hacked off a bunch of people. Anyhow, I might as well cover this topic. Nearly 5 million U.S. children and teens are severely obese. 5 million, guys, a near doubling over the last 20 years. This is causing problems with their health, including diabetes, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, and liver disease. But most kids don't get obesity surgery, mainly because most public and private health insurance doesn't cover it, or they live far from surgery centers. 5 million children. Now, this is 100% the parents' fault, period. That's all I can say. And I'll talk about it more tomorrow's show. Austin, you've got about 60 seconds. Go ahead and close up the show, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. God bless.
Yeah, absolutely, Bart. And again, guys, thank you for getting the truth out there. Thank you for helping us just talk to more people. I mean, that's one of our biggest goals, is just getting more people talking about the truth, because there's so much disinformation, so much rhetoric, so much propaganda from the left right now that it's very difficult sometimes for a lot of people to sift through it. So again, thank you for your support. Thank you for supporting healthmasters.com. If you guys need anything, be sure to give us a call. Check out the website, healthmasters.com. We have the product of the week on sale right now, the B-Complex, incredibly popular product, really good product, staple in my supplement stack every single day, on sale right now for over 10% off. And also be sure to vote for the product of the week that you want to see win on Wednesday. We actually have a couple big ones that are very close, including the Tribulus, GHI, Clinton Adrenal Support. So have an awesome night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.